Welcome to the February edition of the GPC Constructing Excellence Southwest podcast. You are here today with Alice Taylor of Ward Williams Associates and Oliver Tyack of Appleyard and True. Today we are going to be talking about apprenticeships, specifically construction apprenticeships, as that's both of our backgrounds. And there will also be a little bit of a slight bias to apprenticeships where the outcome is a degree, as that's also our background and bias. So with a slight skew, essentially we are here to highlight the positivities of apprenticeships to students essentially coming up through, making their GCSE choices, perhaps looking further ahead into the future, or also perhaps maybe their A-level or wider university choices for their future careers. So Alice, do you want to introduce yourself?
Thanks, Oliver. Hi, everyone. I'm Alice Taylor. I'm a trainee project manager working for Ward Williams. So I started my degree apprenticeship with the University College of Estate Management and with Ward Williams, obviously, back in September 2022. And I'm now in my third year of my degree and of my apprenticeship. So in terms of my obviously previous background, so I did A-levels and obviously GCSEs beforehand. So did my A-levels and got them in 2020. And then I had 2 years out where I actually did COVID testing for 2 years. That gave me some really, really good experience in terms of liaising with lots of different people, growing as a person on a kind of personal level anyway, but also gaining more employability sort of skills. And I also then kind of got a good understanding of project management itself as well. Oliver, do you want to give a little bit of a background about you?
Yeah, it's fine. It's quite similar, really. I think I was, you know, apart from slightly a year ahead with the sick form side of things. So I was, you know, did my sick form studies, completed that in 2019. I did the international baccalaureate as opposed to A-levels. Prior to that, naturally GCSEs. And then without any formative construction job, apart from, you know, some part-time labouring, so to speak, during you know, early years of employment, jumped straight into the apprenticeship, straight after the sick form, really. So finished my exams early summer, started the apprenticeship late summer, autumn time of 2019. So that was a TDA recently, as of last year, being absorbed by Torbay Council. I stayed there for over five and a half years really, and only this month, fourth week in the job, joined Appleyard and True here in Plymouth. So yeah, I've finished my degree part, so typical degree 3 years long, apprenticeship 5 years. You can sort of split it a few ways. A lot of people do an HNC, for example, at Exeter College for 2 years and then join partway through and do the degree. Well, I did it at UWE in Bristol for the last three. I actually did the UWE route in Bristol for the whole five. So I've done the 5 years there with a sort of integrated chartership process. Year or more ago started the assessment for professional competence with the RICS, Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors, as well, sort of building up the experience ready to sit for that. I think you're in a bit of a similar boat with the RICS, Alice, but just slightly further down the line, really.
Yeah. So obviously I'm in my third year, so I've got obviously another year for the degree itself, and then obviously I've got the chartership thereafter, so the APC, and that's obviously with the RICS, and my apprenticeship covers that full journey, including the chartership at the end, and obviously then I would reach the endpoint assessment. So yeah, it's really good how it just covers the whole journey all the way through. Obviously it's 5 years, but it's, you know, 5 years of a really good learning journey and gaining loads and loads of experience during work as well.
We're both doing formally, so to speak, in terms of the apprenticeship standard, the Chartered Surveyor degree route. the level six apprenticeship. Alice would be doing the chartered project management surveyor pathway, whereas within that degree, the chartered surveyor, I'm doing the chartered quantity surveyor pathway. So similar degrees, same standard of apprenticeship, slightly different outcome in terms of discipline. So yeah, there is a slight variance there in terms of length, your course being 4 years at uni, mine being five, different institutions, different pace of life as well. My studies were all in person. Yours a little bit more of a hybrid approach, aren't they? How do you find that?
Yeah, so it's good. So all of mine is online. In terms of obviously the learning, we've got something called a virtual learning environment. So that is where it's like just a centralized platform where I get all of my different modules on there. Like the weeks are split down into what activities I've got to do. And then obviously in certain points of the term, we've then got assessments or like computer marked assessments, assignments, that sort of thing. So everything's really clear on the virtual learning environment with UCM in terms of what the expectations are and what you've got to do. And I really like that. I'm quite a structured person. I like to know when I've done enough. And so I find that, you know, the uni is really quite prescriptive with that, which is great. And then obviously in terms of not having to go into a university, everyone has different preferences, but for me, that was just the best way forward because it meant I could be really, really flexible with the work and with uni and obviously with personal life as well. There's a lot to juggle, but I was able to kind of fit in my, fit my university in and around work commitments and personal commitments as well. So that was really good. But obviously, I think if you're going in as well, that's giving you a really, really good experience in terms of meeting other people face to face and having that, you know, interaction with lots of other different people as well. So I think there's obviously a big positive there too.
Slightly different because mine, well, I had online, but only during COVID for obvious reasons, really. So I was essentially at UE, it was once a week. So during term time, it could have been a Tuesday 1 year, Thursday the next, etc. Break it down as two semesters or terms per academic year. They're only about 11 weeks apart with a reading week in the middle. So you sort of got that late September you start, 5 weeks, week off, 5 weeks, a few weeks for Christmas. Then there's a few more weeks off where you may or may not have an exam. Come back in sort of February time, another 5 weeks, Easter, give or take, a couple of weeks off, another 5 weeks. Then you might have some exams at that point. Then come the end of May, or even April rather, you don't even have to go back again until September. So as much as you sort of think, oh, once a week at uni, well, it's going to be quite a lot around work, when you split it out, particularly for me, it was 22 trips of a year, that's 22 days. And they soon start counting down once you started that term. So it is quite a lot on top of work, but it's manageable. Mm. You need to just discipline yourself. But no, coming back to the whole in person, etc., it's very, I found it very useful. So you've got quite a large radius of people all meeting in the same place. And what that allows you to have is quite a good perception of what's going on around the country. The whole of, most of the south of England, you've got people working on Hinkley Point, you've got people working in Wales, utility networks, you've got people on airports, central London skyscrapers, various infrastructure schemes, having a real depth of what's going on in the industry. But no, there's different pathways, different routes, but it's all, I think, quite good experience, more so than a full-time degree, because I think of it like a set of scales. You've got your academia on one side, a traditional old school set of scales, your experience on another. So if one, if you do a full-time degree, you've got all your academia first, but you've got no experience. So those scales, those weights aren't very balanced. Whereas if you're doing a degree apprenticeship, topping it up gradually to a degree level over a few years, but then 4 days a week, you're in the working environment. So having all that experience, kind of learning on the job before you've actually got to the degree course, especially by the end of those final years when they teach the sort of the meatier stuff, the topic, you know, you've kind of already learned it. So you might be doing it, but you haven't had that background learning to it. So when it comes to doing those topics and those modules, you've got a much better advantage over full-time students. And it's not like, oh, I'm doing a degree. You need to put less time into it because you know a lot of it already. So it's a linked up approach, but those scales are very balanced on the apprenticeship route.
So we contacted our friends at Building Plymouth and Build Torbay, and they basically returned some questions or kind of myth-busting ideas for us that they've sought out from students and schools nearby. So we work really closely with those kind of groups to be able to encourage students into the construction industry across all the different kind of trades, and obviously on the professional surveying side as well. And we tend to, you know, go into different schools to give talks, educate them about what's out there and what's involved. So it's really great that they've given us some questions today. So I think we've got a couple of questions and then a couple of kind of myths that we're going to try and bust. And then you can hear it from kind of firsthand from us having or going through the journey. So can you advise on your experience of the application process in terms of how you found a job and also what to expect at an interview? What are your first thoughts on that, Oliver?
So I think for me, I can kind of do both sides of the coin, really, because, you know, I applied, found the job for the apprenticeship in 2019. But I've also since that, this was at Torbay Council, put together some sort of job descriptions for apprentices that have actually joined that business after myself. And I was involved in the interview process for them. In that application process too. So I've kind of been on both sides of the table for the apprenticeships and apprentices, really. So in terms of my own personal experience, where did I find my job when I went to TDA? That was just Indeed, the job site. I know there is the sort of find an apprenticeship government page. My perception is that not everything actually gets listed on there. So I think a lot of school careers, advisors, etc. will say, use this government website. I don't think it's actually as full as it may be intended. So it's good to keep a wide breadth on the wider market. And I think just do some general research of companies as well. In terms of what to expect at an interview, kind of covered off a bit there how I've found my role. I think that can vary because I did attend a couple of interviews actually with different companies. So I went to one where it was a bit more of a come to our offices. All the other shortlisted candidates were there as well. Went off into sort of a private room with a couple of their senior staff members for individual Q&A really. I suppose your traditional interview format. And then there was also a group project as well, where they had a Lego model and they wanted to see how you worked in the team to borrow, you know, I can't remember what it was now. I think it was building a digger actually, so it had the wheels and all the Lego components, but they wanted to see how you worked in the team following that instruction manual, perhaps your drawings on a construction project. So you sort of took the lead, who went into the shadows, who was a bit bossy and rude, all of those different characteristics. So there's a few sort of dynamics there. When I'd done it before in my previous employer to recruit new apprentices, we set them an assignment before their interview. One of our projects, quite well sort of publicised around the local area, so there was quite a lot of planning documents on it. Do some research, and then for the quantity surveying one, etc., cost management, a bit of a presentation about the project with perhaps some key risks that you may see, what you know about quantity surveying, and also the project, because that demonstrated, okay, I know what I want to do, I know what I want to be, the profession, but it also demonstrated a bit about the organization as well. So know the organization's mission, know what they're doing, try and read up about them, and make sure, you know, it is difficult. You haven't been in the role before. You've only really got literature online, but just try and find out as much as you can about the job you're applying to, what that role is. What is a project manager? What is a building surveyor? If you're applying for either of those. So just try and be as clued up as you possibly can, really. I think that's the best advice I can give on that one. What's your sort of experience, Alice?
So I applied through the government apprenticeships website, and my experience was actually really positive on there, because I was able to kind of filter how far I wanted to be away from home for the actual role. Obviously, my office is now in Plymouth, which is really, really great for me. And then obviously I was able to filter to like the construction industry, because I knew I had a real keen interest in the built environment. I knew I kind of really wanted to be able to do a degree apprenticeship. So I kind of filtered to like a level 6 apprenticeship. And then that's how I found Warburg Williams through there, really. And then obviously I just did some extensive research over the company. As you said, Oliver, like it's really, really important to kind of feel like you would, you know, you really believe in the company's values, the company's vision and mission and all of those sorts of things. You really need to be behind it yourself. So I did a lot of research around that and obviously found out that I was, you know, really, really on board with their ethos and kind of who they were as a company. So just like did loads and loads of research around the company, and loads of research around kind of the role of a project manager. But maybe, you know, I looked at the difference between a consultant project manager and a construction owner and a contractor project manager, and those sorts of like basic bits of knowledge that I knew going into an interview I would need to have that foundational knowledge about, just to not really to show that I knew bits, because obviously I was coming in really, really green anyway. I had no idea about construction, but just to show willing that I've, you know, been willing to learn, willing to pick up on bits myself and try and teach myself on a couple of things. And it just shows that you're motivated, really, and you're interested and keen in the role. So yeah, and then obviously I had 2 interviews and they were really, really positive. I had a really, really good experience. I hadn't really done a proper interview before, so I was really quite nervous. But I think the key things are is just obviously just know the role, show you've done that prior research about the company and prior research about the role itself. Make sure you go in there with questions to ask. That's really, really important. If you've got questions about the company, you want to learn a little bit more, you want to maybe know a little bit more about who's been interviewing you and how they got into the role themselves, maybe just about like what the company's like on a day-to-day basis, working in the office, like all of those sorts of things are really important to try and grasp in an interview. And yeah, like just don't be afraid to ask questions. It's really important, and be yourself, because that's who they're going to want.
I think you caught it there, Alice, when you said about, you know, you came in really, really green. I think if you think of an exam, your GCSEs or whatnot, it's very much what do you know, and that, you know, your effort that you've put in to all your revision and everything else goes by the wayside, because it's what you've put to pen in that exam, what you've put to paper rather in that exam. Whereas in an interview, what you know isn't so relevant. It's about your ethos as a person, the effort you're going to put in. You know, you can learn over time. You're not expected to know much, but a company is going to want someone that puts in a lot of effort, passionate about what they do, the role. They're going to grab it with both hands, get behind it, embrace what you're doing, and everything else like that. Really, it's more about yourself as a person as opposed to what you know. So having some background construction experience at that point, not particularly relevant. You're expected to be green, so to speak. So yeah, I think you picked up on a very good point there, Alice, just in terms of the outlook on where you need to be in
your interview, of course,
and the mindset around it.
And I think that kind of links into the third question there that we've got, just, you know, saying from Bill Torbay, and they said, somebody said, would I be at a disadvantage applying for an apprenticeship if I've not got any construction experience? Obviously, you know, we can turn around and say definitely no. Like, obviously, I came out of school, did my A-levels, which were completely not related to construction. But obviously, they, you know, during your A-levels, you're still practicing learning and you're practicing research. And you're also, more most importantly, I think, practicing being disciplined and being able to juggle multiple different things in your life. And I think if you've been able to showcase those sorts of skills as well, which you do in A-levels, or you do in any other kind of qualification, then you're really showcasing that one willing that you're willing to learn, but you're also structured, you're disciplined, you're motivated. And I think that's really important. So I think maybe the key thing is, and maybe I obviously I did COVID testing, so I had a really busy couple of years, but I think in hindsight, I would have really liked to maybe do some construction work experience. And I would say, so in terms of the knowledge front, no, like it's completely normal and understandable to be green like we were, but maybe just doing a little bit of work experience before would look really, really good, because it is that willingness to learn. And it's also the fact that you've then showcased that you've had a bit of a taster and you really enjoyed it and you're really, really keen for it. So I think get yourself out there into different companies, contact them on LinkedIn, pop into offices, email them, give them your CV and just kind of say, look, I'm really, really keen to do some work experience and get a bit more of a taster about what's out there. And that will help kind of you kind of guide which pathway you're interested in, whether that be like through the trades or in terms of surveying. It might be building surveying, quantity surveying, project management. It will give you that really good taster, and also it looks great on your CV and to talk about in interviews as well.
Yeah, I think that's quite important, Alice. I think there's no denying that having some construction experience would be a added advantage, but it's not the be all or end all. If you have, you know, but I do think having a part-time voluntary role, perhaps alongside your studies, or, you know, a part-time job, both of those, I think are quite key. If you want to, you know, there's a pool of people applying for an apprenticeship with you. You need to try and distinguish yourself above the parapet as being the best. You don't, you know, you can't do that just by, you know, perhaps just getting your grades. Your grades might be good, but it doesn't show how you operate in the world in a business-like environment. So even if, you know, let's say, I know it's quite common for 16 to 18-year-olds, that sort of age, to get a part-time job in a fast food outlet, perhaps. You might be serving burgers or chips, cooking the fries. However, you're working as a team. You're in that production world. Having a few months of that on your CV shows, you know, you've got commitment, you've turned up to the job, etc. You've worked in that team, you've got the job done. That sort of experience, I think, that's good for an employer, because else, if you know, if you're coming out 18, say you're trying to do an apprenticeship, you know, I think perhaps particularly for the 18-year-old entry level or older than that, you know, a company's going to want to have someone that's perhaps had a bit of experience in the workplace, just so that they understand how the working life is. So I think, yeah, that's particularly important, I would say.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that, Oliver. And it's that kind of like being able to pick out specific examples where you've showcased some employability skills. As you say, if you've had a part-time job before, or maybe you've come across a challenge in, like, you know, if you have come out of school, then where have you come across a challenge in school? How have you overcome that? That's the kind of core skills and values really that you need to be able to showcase.
I think in an interview as well, yeah, everyone has gone to school. It's probably not going to set you aside from the crowd. So using some examples, you know, it's a very common question. What, give an example of when you've worked in a team or when you've overcome a challenge, all of that, you know, those different things. So if you can demonstrate how you've worked in a team for an extracurricular club, perhaps sport, not necessarily a sport, an employment job, etc. You know, if you took that fast food chain, I've been in a team, I've worked with people, and it's, you know, working with adults as well, not necessarily just students your own age. It's working with a sort of a diverse group of people. You know, you come into the role as an apprentice, you're working with, you know, adults, but, you know, sort of, it could be sort of your parents' age or older in some cases, you know, or they could sort of be in between. And it is quite a different dynamic when you're used to being at school with people no more than a year or so above and below you, to then working in with adults. It's a different interpersonal relationship. So having a job or experience or something with that type of, you know, adults essentially, I think is a really good trait for an incoming apprentice to essentially have. So in terms of the apprenticeships, Alice, I think we could probably cover this one off quite quickly, really. But we did have a question from Torbay students about what apprenticeships are available in construction. I think the answer is pretty much every discipline you could think of, really. But, you know, we've been asked to sort of split that into degree apprenticeships and non-degree apprenticeships. So shall I let you have the floor on that one initially?
So, I mean, I can definitely cover up in terms of like the degree apprenticeships. I've met loads of different people from lots of different companies in the construction industry who have taken lots of different pathways for a degree apprenticeship, whether that potentially be having like a week in a university a term potentially, or also doing one day a week, which is what I'm doing, in person or virtual. There's so many different ways of doing it. And then in terms of obviously the jobs that are out there for level six, in terms of like level six surveying apprenticeship, so mine is obviously within construction management, and that'll be under the project management pathway with RICS. But obviously you've also got building surveyors, commercial property surveyors, like planning and development, quantity surveyors, rural surveyors, charter surveyors, valuation surveyors, and real estate, residential. There is a absolute wealth of different surveying opportunities out there, and they obviously are all covered by the level six. There's so much out there, so it's definitely just like, I think, research. But I think also there does need to be more of a change even further in schools to be able to educate students about what's out there in terms of those, I guess, the professional surveying side of things. Because I think we've got a myth to kind of bust from Build Plymouth, and they're kind of saying that there's this reputation within the construction industry that it's very much on the trade side only. But obviously, you know, we can say from our side now, having had a couple of years in the industry, that actually there's so many more roles out there. And obviously they are now increasingly being covered through apprenticeships, whether that be degree or non-degree. Did you want to cover anything more about the non-degree stuff, Oliver?
Yeah, that's fine, Alice. I think, you know, just in terms of, I think it's important for the degree level just to say that it's not just surveyors. You know, you can be an engineer. UE in Bristol, they offer civil engineering apprenticeship, for instance.
Yeah.
Building services engineering, you know, dealing with mechanical, electrical, public health, design of buildings or other facilities. You know, it is diverse and it's getting increasingly so. I know recently that they've launched an apprenticeship for solicitors, for instance. You know, and you could sort of think as a student, oh well, a solicitor's got nothing to do with construction. Well, you know, there's a lot of quite complex construction contracts and legal issues when it comes to estates and property matters. You know, there is a lot of sectors all feed into construction, insurance as well. You know, not that that might be a degree, but you sort of think of being insurance or construction, a bit unrelated, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. But no, I think, you know, in terms of non-degree, even if you take the surveyor route, you don't have to be do a degree to be a quantity surveyor. You're not going to be chartered, and you're not going to get the most experience or, you know, hierarchy in terms of qualification. But you can do a level four quantity surveying technician apprenticeship, for instance. I think Exeter College, for instance, offer that. You know, you could do that one for 2 years, work in a job, see how you go. And if you feel you've got some knowledge and you want to take it to the next level, you know, you can do that sort of 3-year top up and get the degree. And then once you've got the degree, you can work to become chartered. You know, non-degree, it's not just the trades that you might get, but I think it's, you know, that sort of progression route. You know, if you were an electrician, for example, you could go and do an electrical installation apprenticeship, and then you might think, oh, okay, I want to be a contract manager, or, you know, of, you know, electrical designer, etc. So you could top that up with a degree apprenticeship if you really wanted to, and then you could be a member of the Chartered Institute of Building Services Engineering, or Institute of forgot what that stands for. But, you know, there's different options. You know, just because you do one doesn't mean you can't add to that later. You could start off at a lower level and build to it. So, you know, same, you know, you might think, oh, at least you want to go and be a plumber. Fine. You're not cutting anything short. You know, you're not cutting your prospects off by going and doing that level 2, maybe level 3 plumbing apprenticeship. Because you could, if you wanted to move on up through the ranks and you wanted to build that with a qualification, you can add to that later again. So it can be quite progressive. And I think, from what I understand, the HR apprenticeships, human resources, they very much go stage to stage. Oh, we'll do one, do the next, level 2, level 3, level 4, next thing you're doing a foundation degree level. And that's similar, you know, just using that as an analogy, you can sort of apply that in construction as well. So it's, you know, the list is endless, really. But I would recommend, if you want to see a full list of apprenticeship, going on the, can't think what the, go on the Find Apprenticeship Training government page. And if you go to that one, it gives you an entire list of apprenticeships available. I've just done it now. 653 apprenticeships, apparently. You can go all the way from a GCSE level course right the way up to a master's degree. And in construction, if you want to be a town planner, that's a master's course. So, you know, there's a wide range there of non-degree, undergraduate degree, and postgraduate stroke master's options as well, all as apprenticeships. So it's limitless.
In terms of, obviously, what you said, Oliver, about whether you do degree or non-degree, or, you know, any other type of apprenticeship in construction, whatever you do is a really good stepping stone to what you choose to move on to, or if you want to continue on that pathway. Like, there is, anything you do is going to look great on your CV, because, again, you're developing those employability skills, you're developing your experience, and you're developing your knowledge. In terms of kind of like after degree, so for me, my apprenticeship will still include the chartership within the 5th year. So that'll be going through the RITS APC, which Oliver obviously mentioned earlier. And that, well, obviously we've spoken about that one. That includes the endpoint assessment and things. So to become fully chartered within an apprenticeship is such an amazing opportunity. But you can also, if you want to, and if you need to because of commitments and things, you can decide to do it over a longer period as well. So you can be really flexible. So I think, you know, in terms of if you're doing a degree or not a degree, whatever you decide to do is still kind of like a building block, excuse the pun, of your, you know, your future employment going forwards.
Yeah, no, I think that's very linking now to the question, really, from Building Plymouth. What are the next steps after university, a degree or an apprenticeship? I mean, if you get a degree, come out of uni, and you've got to try and find a job, assuming you haven't got one whilst you're doing your degree already. Which, you know, it's going to be quite challenging, because you might have a module at 10 a.m. on a Monday and then 2 p.m. on a Tuesday and 1 p.m. on a Thursday. You can't really work a job easily on that. So, yeah, if you assume the normal basis, you've got no job until you've got your degree, you've got your certificate in your hand, great. Now I'm going to try and find a job. you know, you could be waiting a little while. You've got all the application process at that point. Whereas if you've got an apprenticeship, you kind of, you've already cut that process down because you're in the job whilst you've got your, whilst you're doing and completing your degree. And then also by the time you get to the end of your uni course, you've got a lot more experience than perhaps your peers do as well. You know, you've obviously been earning salary, a wage, etc. too. So I think as a whole, you're going to be a lot more of a well-rounded person at the end of the sort of 5-year chartered period, as you would perhaps be, you know, if you did the degree route and then came into the job. With the sort of overlap in a chartership, as you mentioned, Alice, that, you know, if you did a degree, then you want to try and find a job, then you're sort of building up your experience, those scales I mentioned earlier, from, let's just say, you know, the ground level, zero. It's going to take you a few years just to get some initial foundation experience before you can actually be practicing your job role itself. Then you're sort of going to have to approach employer and say, oh, can I do the chartership? Which, there's two prongs to this approach. You know, a lot of companies might say, yeah, I really want you to do the chartership. That will help us as a company. And others perhaps might not be so keen because it's their time commitment. It also perhaps adds to your CV, which, you know, they may or may not want you to do it. It might give you some leverage perhaps to leave in due course if you so wish to do so, you know, and it would help them, you know, you being chartered as well for their bids and tenders, etc. But you know, you're after year five, year six, you're going to be further ahead in terms of qualification and experience than if you just did that full-time degree route. You know, so it comes back to the other myth. Would I be at a disadvantage for doing an apprenticeship as opposed to a full-time degree? Well, no, I don't think that's the case. You know, I think both of us, we can only think of benefits really of the apprenticeship over and above doing it as a full-time course.
Yeah, I think, no, I think obviously everyone is different though, and everyone's got the different ways of doing things. Everybody learns differently. So I think whatever route you choose to do, whether that be university or apprenticeship, will be the right one for you. But obviously, you know, I think the key potential, obviously downside, well, not downside, but challenge probably is a better word to use. The key challenge with the apprenticeship, and I've definitely been working on overcoming this over the past few years, is just that work-life balance, not putting too much pressure on yourself, because if you're striving for 110% in uni and you're striving for 110% in work, and you've got loads of things going on outside of work as well, it's going to be really, really difficult to manage everything. So you have to be kind to yourself, and you have to really look out for your well-being, because that is, you know, the most important thing at the end of the day to be able to keep going. So I think that will be the key challenge, which is obviously it's something that you learn with practice. I've learned to manage stuff a lot better now, to not put as much pressure on myself, to learn about, you know, what's enough. And I'm still working on that, but I think it's all part of the learning journey. And obviously these are the kind of skills, again, that you're going to need as you go later into adulthood, and you've got more life hurdles and things to juggle at the same time. So I think that's probably a key one to stress as well, but it's one of those that, you know, you will find your own way of doing stuff, and you'll find the best kind of strategies that work for you.
Yeah, I think that kind of definitely, if you were 16 or 18, what you've just said really wouldn't sound appealing. But when you look at it, you know, post going through that experience, you know that's sort of, it's not a direct consequence of the apprenticeship. It's not, you know, you're getting your degree, but in the background there's that life skill of managing deadlines, stress, everything else, which you've got to learn at sort of some point in life. So, you know, I think it's a good, all in all, I think it's quite good that happens. It might not be enjoyable with the stress and everything else, but it puts you in good stead for managing conflicting deadlines in a workplace. You know, I suppose there is that phrase, you've got to be cruel to be kind, which might sound a little bit off piece, but you know, for your own, I suppose, good as a person or a well-rounded person, you've got to go through some difficulty and challenge. You know, you find adversity by, you know, by cutting through challenges, essentially. So it's all good in the end, and it's all very useful life skills, I suppose.
Yeah, and obviously I would say as well, like, during the apprenticeship, I mean, I'm really, really enjoying it. You come across these challenges and hurdles, and you develop as a person from them even more so. But obviously during the apprenticeship, as well as the amazing opportunities that you're getting in work and uni, and the kind of synergy between those two parts, obviously you're meeting other like-minded young professionals. So, you know, myself and Oliver are part of Generation for Change, G4C Devon. And that is a really great network to meet like-minded professionals and friends in the industry at the same time, but also professionals that you're going to grow up together with and probably work on projects and things in due course. So you're really building those connections from a junior level of your career as well. So I think that's really important. You know, within employment as well, I know in my company we do loads of like charity work and teamwork, fundraising, bits like that, and that really builds you as a person as well. I know that's really definitely helped me shape the person that I am today. So I think getting stuck in loads of those bits during your apprenticeship is really, really key and important as well to build up your own like person, I guess, because that's what you're still doing at this sort of time in your career.
I think what I've found as well, you know, having been somewhere where they sort of split the part-time and full-time is up, you know, due to schedules and timetables, etc. You know, I'd say the average age of people doing apprenticeships is higher than if you were doing a full-time student. And I think that reflects, you know, people maybe going on a little bit in life. They don't want to just go back to uni and do a degree. You know, they've got some commitments, they've got family, they've got, you know, they're just further down that life pathway. So on the sort of, you know, coming back to what we were saying earlier about building your CV and nothing's going to, you know, become a blocker later in life, you can always change. I think the apprenticeship offers a nice route to expand your qualification and your skill set, change career if your first one hasn't worked out, or come into your first career. You know, it doesn't matter. But it enables a route to a qualification that you might not have, you know, let's say, you know, on my course, you know, there were parents, for instance, you've got children. Yeah. You can't just, you know, you've got a family to support. You can't just quit your job and go to uni like you would if you were, you know, 17, trying to think about, you know, expanding your horizons to the same level. So the apprenticeship, I think, is very good in that it offers you the ability to maintain a job whilst also, you know, working to change, you know, get some experience, but have that study side by side to get a qualification, or even, you know, you've done that initial level three apprenticeship or whatever it is, you want to go on and do that level six, well, you can do that. You know, you hear the phrase saying, you were, oh, I'm going to go back to university. So people have got a job, they've quit their job, they've come back to uni, and then they sort of come out on the other side. That's, you know, the apprenticeships is sort of, it's there as well, you know, to help you later in life too. I think I've probably gone on a little bit long-winded for what I'm trying to say, but it's helpful for, you know, just as an option for any person considering a career change, etc. too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's no maximum age to it or anything like that. So I think a great opportunity for everybody. I think obviously conscious of time, but the one thing maybe we haven't mentioned is like what kind of drives me as well on the days where I feel like it feels like more challenging or there's a hurdle. I think you just constantly need to feel inspired about what you're doing and know why you're doing it. So like for me, a key driver is the fact that, you know, being part of all of these different construction projects, I am building a legacy, I guess, in my local community or in the different areas. So obviously, like, I'm at the minute working on a project down in Devonport, which is obviously one of the most deprived areas of Plymouth, and we're working with Plymouth Argyle to create a development that's going to be a massive benefit for the local community, both in terms of that social value, but also in terms of obviously health and well-being, sports, and bringing the community together. And I'm going to feel really, really proud knowing that I've had such an input into that project. So whatever role you do in the construction industry, you are playing a part in forming something, whatever it might be, whether that may be on the private sector or the public sector, whatever you're doing, you're going to be forming something or part of forming something that's going to really, really help local communities. Like, for example, we do a lot of work up at Derrifut Hospital. So, you know, that's something to be so proud of. So that really drives me every day. I don't know about you, Oliver, but what would be your kind of like key driver?
Yeah, I suppose particularly for our role, where it's, you know, a lot of project management, things get filtered for you, don't they? So when you remove yourself as the cog in the wheel, things get held up a little bit, or, you know, they don't progress perhaps as quick as they ideally would. So I think it's quite nice, you know, through the apprenticeship, and it would apply in whatever role you're doing, but you know that you've got some responsibility. That's, you know, you've got something that you are taking control of. People are relying and depending on you. It gives you a bit of a purpose. Whereas I think if I was doing a full-time degree, I'd kind of maybe be a bit lost and sort of, you know, where's the motivation here? Whereas, you know, doing the degree the way I did it, because I wouldn't like to think of myself as being a particularly sort of academic person. The work is the distraction from the uni and the studying. So if I'm trying to do my uni, I'll be like on the other page, I might start doing work instead. So it's the work sort of helped me through the degree as opposed to perhaps the other way around. But it's, you know, I think a key thing is, you know, you know that these schemes are happening because there's an issue. You're helping that end user, whether that be the public in a hospital, you know, with their appointments, or, you know, delivering facilities for schools, which is what I've done quite a lot of. You know, you're helping all of those staff members with better facilities, or helping those pupils by having a play area or some nicer teaching spaces. However it is, you're making a difference. And often what isn't seen from, you know, our role directly, from, you know, going to the site, you know, the site is our focus, perhaps better than the people. So when you get to the end of that project, it kind of don't necessarily realise at the time how much of a difference it will make for the people and the stakeholders that are, you know, essentially the ones driving, you know, the role that you're doing. That, you know, we're driving their change. So it's, you know, when they come and see the end product, it's, you know, those sort of opening days and ceremonies, and, you know, when it's all in place, seeing it in use, you know, you do it as a cycle, start a project, end a project. But when you're at the start, it's, oh, what's this going to look like? And then when you get to the end, it's right, well, you've captured their needs, they're really happy with this, ideal. So it's, you know, I think, you know, there's always a goal with a construction project, and that's the end. You know, it's, and I think that's something you sort of strive towards. And then when you've got to that goal, the end, handover, you see the smiles on the faces, and then you sort of on to the next one then. You know, you're gonna have a few at the same time. But I think it's that kind of thing, really, having that purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, and leaving that legacy, as you say, you know. Yeah. Completely agree. So should we just leave it with maybe like one top tip we would say for students, or just anybody in there keen to leap into the construction apprenticeship sector? What would be your one in 20 seconds top tip?
I think it's look early. So, you know, you come into, you know, think of when you're going to be finishing your school career, etc., when you want to be looking for that job. You need to work back from that. So I'd say, you know, if you want to start your role, just talking academic year time, September, you need to kind of know what you're looking for, at least by Christmas, because then you get to that start of January point, and, you know, there might be some published before, but there's going to be a bit of an influx then of people then putting adverts out for apprenticeship to start for that following academic year. So you need to kind of build up a bit of a, okay, well, what do I want to do? Ideally, you know, timings, it could change, but you know, just do your research and be well planned for, you know, essentially those interview times, because you see an advert and you might only have a couple of weeks to put in an application. So it's just making sure that you're primed and you're ready, because you don't want to miss that. And if you're not successful in an apprenticeship, don't beat yourself up about it. But what I think is you know, probably quite good advice is to try and give yourself a bit of a backup. So if you're looking at a degree apprenticeship, you know, the full plan could be a full-time degree. You might want to do it, but you don't want to just get to, you know, the end of it and go, okay, what am I going to do this year? Because your motivation is just going to drop and you'll have to beat yourself up. So have, you know, apply for a friendship on one side, have all your heart in it, well, I'm going to get it, try your absolute best, but just apply for a full-time uni course perhaps as well. You know, just in case you don't get one of those apprenticeships. And it's always, as much as it might not be nice, having that plan B is more important than, you know, not having any plan at all. So I know that's a bit more than 20 seconds, but
didn't hit my 20 second timer, but no, that
I think be well primed. I think prime yourself, yeah. And be realistic, and, you know, keep your head held high. Okay, I might not get this. Let's put a fallback plan in place. So I did that, and then I sort of got through the apprenticeship side, great, and then I had some interviews for uni. And one, I sort of had an unconditional offer. So I sort of carried that one through. And then I sort of turned it down once I knew the apprenticeship was secured. So it's always important just to maybe not put all your eggs in that one basket, just in case, you know, the apprenticeship doesn't work out for some reason. You know, hopefully it will for you. But yeah, I think that's quite important.
Really good points. I think for me it would be, like, very much in a nutshell, but I think it would be authentic in who you are, and really build on your own personal values and your personal skills and who you are as a person, because employers love when you are literally yourself and you're authentic. And I would also say, be willing to learn, accept that you are going to make mistakes. You are on this journey, you're coming in new. There is no expectation for you coming into the construction industry to have all the knowledge in the world, because you're not going to have that. As you said, we both came in really, really green. So just be really willing to learn, and you know, accept that you're going to make mistakes, and it's all part of the learning journey. And then lastly, I think, you know, the work experience and getting out to different construction companies, or consultancy firms, or, you know, all of the different trades, and just getting yourself really, really involved in anything that you might be interested in, just to give you a little bit of a flavor, will help you guide your pathway, I guess. And groups like Build Plymouth, Build Torbay, Build Greater Exeter down here in the southwest, get in touch with those people, because they will really be able to help you, point you in the right direction, give you those contacts. They've built some really good contacts with companies, so they'll be able to give you some guidance and advice and signpost you to maybe some careers events or some work experience that might work for you. So definitely get in touch with them.
That's, and on that fine. Note. Thank you, Alice. So no, I think, you know, that's hopefully been quite useful. I don't know what your thoughts are, Alice, but I think we should thank Torbay Council, Build Torbay, Lucy Lewis, for providing the questions from Torbay students. We hope that we've represented Torbay well, and also Plymouth City Council, Building Plymouth, Emma Hewitt and Morven McLean for providing the myths and questions from the students in Plymouth as well. So we've
Thank you very much,
covered
everyone.
Some of Devon there, that's where we're based. Although, you know, yes, we've covered those areas, but things that we've talked about are going to be relevant to people across the whole Southwest Peninsula and, you know, I suppose beyond really as well. So, you know, hopefully that's been useful and for anybody listening. And I suppose that is the February G4C podcast with Alice Taylor and myself.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Goodbye.